This episode of Intelligent Medicine is brought to you by the Fresh Pressed Olive Oil Club. Did you know that olive oil is at its peak of flavor and nutrition right after it's fresh pressed at harvest time? That's why my favorite olive oil is delivered to me direct from the latest harvest, thanks to the Fresh Pressed Olive Oil Club. And now you can try a bottle yourself, normally $39, for just $1, with no obligation to buy anything else. Visit myfavoriteoliveoil.com. In my case, it truly is. MyFavoriteOliveOil.com. MyFavoriteOliveOil.com. Welcome to today's Intelligent Medicine Podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Ronald Hoffman, and today's podcast is all about blood sugar control. And, okay, of course, that conjures up pictures of type 1 and type 2 diabetes, and we're seeing quite an epidemic of those specific conditions. But we're also going to talk about blood sugar control in a broader context, because there's information that suggests, and we'll go over some of the studies with you, that optimizing blood sugar control within normal limits. I mean, even you go to the doctor and they say, you're okay, you don't have diabetes yet, you know, watch what you eat, you know, take it easy, exercise a little bit, then you won't get diabetes. Still, if you're hovering in the borderline regions of blood sugar as measured by your daily blood glucoses, and also an important measurement called hemoglobin A1C, which we're going to talk a little bit about, those borderline values pose a health threat to us. So it really behooves us to optimize our blood sugar control, not just merely avoid the diagnosis of diabetes. With us today is Neil Levin. He's Senior Nutrition Education Manager for Now Vitamins, also a Protocol for Life Balance is the professional line. And he is a frequent contributor to magazines and newspapers. He's author of many scientific papers, and he's featured in numerous radio and TV interviews, including here on Intelligent Medicine. He's one of our go-to experts on a wide variety of topics. His website is honestnutrition.com, and it's a pleasure having you back again on Intelligent Medicine, Neil.
Thank you. I'm always glad to be speaking with you.
And, you know, he has a diplomate in clinical nutrition. He's a certified clinical nutritionist. Neil, frame the issue for us, because, you know, as I said earlier, it's not just about whether or not you have diabetes. It's also about optimal blood sugar control, right?
It is, because if the blood sugar is not under control, then there's a number of risks, including increasing risk for cardiovascular disease, obesity, non-alcoholic fatty liver disease is another factor there. And there's also questions of energy level and just normal functionality. And, you know, one of the reasons that they take a fasting blood sugar is they're trying to see how much is left after an overnight period when you're not eating. And some of that might be circulating in the bloodstream, not getting out because of insulin issues. Another problem could be you're actually generating or creating sugars from other substances in the body, including storage materials, including breaking down proteins or other things like that, where you can actually generate your own sugars. And that's another problem that can be detected from that.
So that may be a consequence of a diet that is like, you know, a low-carb diet, but then you're eating just tons and tons of protein. Maybe you're taking a low-fat, low-carb diet, just eating protein, having protein powders and so on, and lots of meat. You can actually make sugar out of that protein, the proteins that could be problematic.
Yes, and if you're starving, for example, your body is going to break down muscles and other protein sources, mm-hmm. like collagen, to try to create some sugars. And, you know, the body has alternate fuels. People have heard of ketones and ketone diet, where people can burn certain types of fats to use as a different energy source for the brain, for example. But, you know, sugar is one of the main calorie sources and energy sources in the body. It's by the way, it's also used structurally in some materials like glucosamine. Mm-hmm. The glucose in glucosamine is from blood sugar. So we're actually using sugars structurally, which is largely how plants use sugars, by the way.
Mm-hmm. Well, I did a little preliminary research while waiting to get on the call with you today. There's a study, the 2014 study, British Journal of Cancer, that suggests that there's a cancer risk associated with elevations in what's called hemoglobin A1C, which is a test that you don't do every day. You don't finger stick for hemoglobin A1C. It's a test you do every 3 or 4 months. And it gives you sort of an average of what your blood sugars are. And it's a little different than your blood sugars. Your blood sugars should normally range from, about 65 at the low end to, maybe after a meal up to 130. But your hemoglobin A1C, it's a single digit, unless you're in serious trouble. If you're diabetic and you're really way out of control, your hemoglobin A1C might be 11 or 12. I've seen it as high as 14. But for a normal person, we like to see hemoglobin A1C below 5.7. But I looked at a bunch of graphs and it said that if your hemoglobin A1C is not even in the diabetic range, but between 5.5 and 6.0, sometimes 6.2 is used as the cutoff for diabetes, sometimes 6.4. That borderline range increases your risk of breast cancer, colon cancer, pancreatic cancer, and perhaps other cancers. So, wow, a pretty profound effect even out without a diagnosis of diabetes.
Yeah, it's believed that a lot of cells, especially undesirable types, actually like sugar as a fuel and a food, just like we do. And you can actually jumpstart some of these things. You can also change the balance of intestinal microbes, bacteria and the like, in the gut, the probiotics, for example. And if you're eating too much sugar, you can actually encourage candida and other fungi and other bacteria that are less desirable to be growing there, because I don't know if your listeners have heard about prebiotic fibers or resistant fibers, but certain types of starch in the diet can actually feed intestinal bacteria without feeding the undesirable microbes, and it is a way to boost the level of, for example, bifidobacterium in the large intestine and other anaerobic organisms that use fermentation of these materials as a fuel, and the fuel's not available to the things we don't want to grow in the gut. It's not a simple sugar. So simple sugars in abundance become a problem for gut bacteria and immunity.
And it also seems that the gut bacteria may have something to do with metabolism, because, for example, one of the most popular diabetes medications, metformin or glucophage, it seems at least in part to work on the microbiome, altering the intestinal bacteria. Same thing with an herbal formula that we'll talk about a little later, which is berberine. Berberine seems to alter the microbial balance, and maybe that's at least in part its efficacy in terms of controlling blood sugar.
Yes, some of these things work by changing the levels of insulin sensitivity, or insulin resistance is the opposite way of looking at that, where insulin is a hormone that's produced in the body, and it's used to help move sugar out of the bloodstream and into cells and tissues where we can utilize it, and that's a good thing. If we have too much sugar for too long, sometimes it overwhelms the body. We don't have the sensitivity to the sugars, the blood sugar especially, where it can move out of the bloodstream into cells as readily. There's some resistance, there's some breakdown of that pathway because of the overload of too much sugar for too long, which is one of the things that hemoglobin A1C test looks for. And if you have too much sugar for too long, the body simply loses that sensitivity to be able to move the sugar where it belongs appropriately. And if you keep pumping out more and more insulin to try to do a job that it's just not doing because something's, there's a breakdown in the pathway somewhere else, then that excess insulin becomes a problem. It drives down blood sugar. You can have hypoglycemia or low blood sugar because of high blood sugar, ironically. Mm-hmm. And so you get this yo-yo
kind
of
a roller coaster effect. You know, exactly. You get hungrier, you deposit more energy in your fat cells. And, you know, ultimately, you know, you mentioned that, there are other effects, you know, subjective effects besides diseases in terms of how you feel. I sometimes use the term, you know, sugar everywhere, but not a drop to drink. In effect, the body has high levels of blood sugar, but it can't properly be utilized. And if it's not utilized in the muscles, you have fatigue. If it's not utilized in your brain, you've got sort of a brownout of brain function. We actually call that type 3 diabetes, where there's resistance to insulin in the brain. And you know, that may just cause fatigue and depression and lack of initiative. Of course, that makes the whole situation worse if you don't feel like exercising and you're down in the dumps and you get fatter and fatter and, you know, the whole thing goes downhill.
Yeah, I mean, that is a problem also. And, you know, one issue is when you're taking, say, a fasting blood sugar or that type of test, it's a snapshot. Mm-hmm. It's not dynamic. It's not telling you, maybe it's reading within the normal range that you want, but maybe it's moving up or down at the time and you're just getting a snapshot of it. And the body can actually react to that movement as much as the absolute level. So you might get a number that says, I'm great. And the body doesn't feel so great because it's dropping or it's mm-hmm. increasing rapidly. And you're just not catching that with that kind of test. That's where that hemoglobin A1C, that roughly 90-day snapshot of the average blood sugar, is going to be more indicative of what's happening in the body.
I was pretty overjoyed the other day. I just had to take a blood test. And I said, well, throw in a hemoglobin A1C. And I haven't done it for a really long time. And my result, well, I had a 4.9, which is pretty darn good. And I really think it has to do with exercise and diet. And I have good genes. Some of the supplements I've been taking, you know, which include chromium, you know, are probably part of the answer. But according to, you know, one of our great contributors here on Intelligent Medicine, Dr. David Perlmutter, I'm sure you're familiar with him as well.
Oh, yeah.
He's a neurologist, and of course he's concerned about the brain and neurodegeneration. His concern is that he wants to get your hemoglobin A1C really down there. He wants it in the low fives or even in the high fours. And I guess he'd be pretty pleased if a patient showed up with a hemoglobin A1C of 4.9 from a cognitive standpoint.
Well, yeah, because I mean, that's plenty for the brain to function, but not enough to start causing issues with the blood sugar control and that kind of thing.
Indeed. For elevated hemoglobin A1C, if it's greater than 7, you have a 5-fold risk of dementia. So, you know, that's, of course, in the diabetic range. So one thing that I've been playing around with a little bit is continuous glucose monitoring. And we now have some products. You know, they can be expensive sometimes, you know, even when they're prescribed by a doctor, you still have to kick in a substantial copay. You actually apply these things to your arm, and you use either your cell phone or a little device that they give you, and you can check your blood sugar all the time. You can check, you know, you have a meal, check it before the meal, right after the meal, a half an hour after the meal, an hour to the meal, as many times as you like. And it addresses that concern of yours, which is that a random single blood sugar may not tell you the whole story. So, you know, you may discover that even if you have a good hemoglobin A1C, that, you know, if you eat certain foods, your blood sugar is going to go to 220, you know, transiently, it'll come down. That is a way that we've helped some patients explore their reaction to individual foods and meals and exercise regimens.
Well, that's a great point, because let's say you have a decent hemoglobin A1C, but it's an average of too high and too low.
Yeah, right.
So sometimes you have hypoglycemia, you're low energy, mm-hmm. you're moody and things like that, and another time you've got too high, mm-hmm. and you've got those symptoms and side effects. And, you know, neither one's good, but an average is not going
right.
to tell you that
it's,
either.
It's like being stopped by a cop and, you know, you argue with the cop and you say, yeah, but, you know, on average, I'm driving 50 miles an hour. But actually, you know, if you look at the actual values, it's, yeah, you're driving 20 miles an hour sometimes, and other times you're driving, you know, 90 miles an hour, well above the speed limit. It's just the average doesn't necessarily reflect the wild excursions of your blood sugar, which can send you into bouts of hypoglycemia or alternatively, you know, elevated blood sugar. So, yeah, those the Freestyle Libre is one device that's available. There's another one called the Dexcom. And these are coming into prominence as ways of monitoring blood sugar. They're generally recommended for diabetics, but ordinary folks can use them. It's kind of a science fair project that helps you determine how you're reacting to certain foods. Okay, so we've established that we want to optimize our blood sugar, and we have various means to determine what our blood sugar is. So let's start with diet. Okay, and then we can get on to specific supplements, because I know that you're a formulator of supplements and, you know, you really exercise a great deal of research expertise in coming up with the best and most plausible ways to support blood sugar control. But from the standpoint of diet, what can we say?
Well, one thing is a whole food diet is better than a refined food diet, and this is very well established. For example, when you look at whole grains versus non-whole grains in the diet, the whole grains contain fiber. Fiber slows down the intake of blood sugar. Now, a lot of times we'll hear from dietitians or other experts that sugar is sugar, calories are calories, and if you ignore the timing, that's true. But we can't ignore the timing. And timing is that if you can slow the consumption of sugar with fiber, then your blood sugar is not going to spike as high. You're not going to need as much insulin to control it. And there's less pressure and challenge on that whole glucose metabolism system, our whole blood sugar system.
And this is the idea behind the glycemic index or the glycemic load, which calculates values for, you know, certain foods, right?
Right. Like if you look at white sugar, for example, on some scale that's 100 on the glycemic index, where fructose, the fruit sugar, is 20. That's not to say that there's no effect from sugar. And if you do too much fructose, you're still going to have some problems. And, you know, there's actually some specifics on that I can go into briefly. Sure. According to Dr. Lustig, who's the researcher who published all this stuff about fructose potentially being harmful, 500 calories a day from fructose is enough to cause problems where you get non-alcoholic fatty liver and you start getting insulin resistance where the insulin doesn't work appropriately. And he said there's antidotes for that. One is to cut the amount of fructose. Two is to add fiber and slow the uptake. And three is to get exercise and burn those calories.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So those are three what he calls antidotes to high fructose. And he said it doesn't matter what form the fructose is in. It could be in high fructose corn syrup. It could be pure crystalline fructose. It could be in honey, which is a combination with fructose. But it's the 500 calories a day that he said is the threshold where you have these problems. And that's like three cans of soda, mm-hmm. if sweetened soda a day. It's not that much if you start getting these large sodas and things. I know they were trying to ban those in New York a few years ago, but, you know, that's an issue of you have a lot of sugar, it's going to be a problem.
Indeed. And, you know, Dr. Lustig is a pediatrician, so he's pretty concerned with the marketing to kids of these fruit drinks, some of which contain minimal fruit, if any, and are spiked with high fructose corn syrup. And, you know, that combined with a sedentary lifestyle, and you got kids showing up with type 2 diabetes and fatty liver. That's pretty crazy. It's stuff we didn't used to see, you know, 20, 30, 40 years ago. So, in terms of diet, for some people, I've noticed, they really need to be on a very low carb diet. I mean, the, you know, this old formulation where you say, oh, just make sure you have whole grains, you know, have whole grain pasta, don't have white pasta, you know, have, you know, natural oatmeal, not instant oatmeal. For them, they really need to be on a very low carb regimen to optimize their blood sugar. Have you discovered that?
Yes, we found that, you know, but in general, whole grain intake is strongly associated with reduced risk. Because one thing with whole grains, you're eating fiber, you're chewing more, and it's filling you up more. And if you think of the difference between having a glass of fruit juice and eating a piece of fruit, it kind of illustrates that. When you juice, let's say an orange, you can have the juice of several oranges in a small glass and drink that. You're getting all the sugar and almost none of the fiber.
Virtually instantaneously. You can just chug a glass of orange juice.
Right. And in fact, there's diabetics who, when they have low blood sugar, they'll reach for a glass of orange juice to try to raise it quickly. Mm-hmm. But if you have to eat an orange, the act of eating that orange, of chewing it, slows it down. And you're getting the fiber, you're eating the fruit, you're not just getting the juice. And it's the same with carrots or, you know, anything you would juice, that you're getting the juice and removing mostly the fiber. And that means you're not slowing down the sugar, you're concentrating the sugar and having several pieces of produce worth of sugar typically. And there is a difference in how it affects the body.
I'm intrigued by some studies that suggest that people who consume nuts, of which I am one, almonds and pistachios and cashews, sesame and sunflower seeds are among the nuts that are included in some of these studies, that they achieve better blood sugar control. I mean, this is paradoxical because a lot of people say, well, I don't eat nuts, they're very fattening. You know, stay away from nuts. But it turns out that nuts may actually antidote high levels of blood sugar. They might time release their carbohydrate content.
Yeah, and some nuts like pistachios are actually fairly low in fat, so compared to other ones. So even within that category, you have some differences. But you get some fiber, you get protein, you get fats, but you're not getting a ton of sugar in those. You know, when I have my oat cereal in the morning, I'll often add my trail mix, which is dried fruits and nuts and seeds, and get a little handful of that with the grain, with the oats, just to get a little more complete nutrition. I want to get some protein. I want to get some fat because I'm taking some of my vitamins. And when you take, say, a multivitamin and it's got fat-soluble nutrients, it's got vitamin A, D, E, and K, among other things, and it requires about a teaspoon of fat, which is about 5 grams of fat, to trigger the absorption of fat-soluble nutrients and other fats. Why does it take that much? Because it has to tell the pancreas to release enzymes, the pancreatic enzymes, including lipase, which helps you absorb fats. And it has to tell the gallbladder to release the bile, which also helps you absorb fats. And if you don't have a gallbladder, consider looking at MCT oil, medium chain triglycerides.
Which doesn't require
which
that.
Do not they don't require a threshold of fat for absorption. It absorbs directly by itself and can help you absorb fat-soluble nutrients.
Yeah. The news these days is about very low-carb diets for overweight, but also for diabetes. And you know, finally, I think there's research vindication of the low-carb diet paradigm. You know, as you remember, because you lived through it, Dr. Robert Atkins was reviled because, oh my goodness, horror of horrors, he suggested that people, you know, throw away the bun and eat the bacon cheeseburger, and you'll be fine. But, you know, it can't be denied that some patients with diabetes and overweight optimize their insulin response when they're on a very low-carb diet.
Well, that's true. And, you know, people have different metabolisms, and the metabolisms have been shaped by their experiences, and in some cases, wounded or damaged by their experiences,
yes.
Where they need a more extreme diet. But, you know, it's pretty obvious that if you cut the amount of sugar coming in, you're going to have less risk of the overdoses of sugar that are really a hallmark of the modern age and the standard American diet.
Indeed. All right. So let's pause because we divide our podcast into two parts. We're going to focus in part two on a couple of other elements that are very important for blood sugar control. We're going to talk about the impact of exercise, but news you can use, supplements that will help to keep your blood sugar optimized within normal limits. I'm Dr. Ronald Hoffman. Our guest is Neil Levin. He's Senior Nutrition Education Manager for Now Vitamins, also the Physician Line Protocol for Life Balance. I'm Dr. Ronald Hoffman, and this is Intelligent Medicine Podcast.